Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Ready to Pop with me, Caroline Foran. This episode is maybe what we consider the big one. We're preparing for labour. We're wondering what the hell we're in store for, what all of the variables could be and how we might prepare. I was definitely an awful lot more anxious about the idea of giving birth before I recorded this episode and for sure a lot more relaxed about it afterwards. I'm joined here by midwife Anya Hennessy. You may know her on Instagram as midwife_Anya, and she's my expert for this episode to guide us through our upcoming labour experience. So how do home births differ to hospital births? What pain relief is available to us? What happens before, during and after labour? I even asked the question, are we likely to poo ourselves? What signs to act upon? What not to worry about? And so much more. I really, really hope that you find this episode helpful. I'm gearing up now for the big day myself, and I'm getting some of my bigger ducks in a row. Packing my hospital bag is next on my list, and I've already ordered my car seat and buggy to arrive well in advance, mostly because my dog is just a nervous wreck and I need him to get used to the idea of there being a buggy first, let alone a baby inside that buggy. And I've gone with the Upa Baby Vista 2 travel system with Bella Baby, who I cannot recommend enough for advising you on some of these bigger purchases. They take the stress away entirely, because honestly, choosing a buggy on your own, what with all of the conflicting information available online, just might actually be more difficult than choosing a car to buy. Anyhow, definitely go talk to Bella Baby about your next purchases, and for now, over to midwife Anya. Anya Hennessy, thank you so, so much for joining me on this very important episode of Ready to Pop. And I say important because it's just, it's the crucial point in the journey of pregnancy where you are quite literally maybe ready to pop and we're preparing for labour.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. It's lovely that to be asked on and to speak about this topic, because it's obviously it's a big one and it's an important one.
Absolutely. Now, you are a community midwife, and I also want to reference the fact that you have some, I guess, I don't know, would you say patients or clients who may at any moment go into labour and you might have to run, which makes it just all the more realistic.
Yeah, well, I've checked in with them, so at the moment they're all okay. But it's a possibility still.
Oh my God. I'm getting scared now, because I'm 32 weeks. I'm starting 33 weeks in the weekend, and I'm like, that moment is going to come for me sooner than I've mentally prepared for, but that you're going to reassure me about all of that now, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. You're going to feel so empowered and excited after all this, I promise.
Oh, thank you. So before we get into all, I've got a lot of questions to hurl at you, and we'll try and lash through as much information as possible. But can we just give people a little insight into what you do and how what you do differs from, because you're community midwife, so you're not actually in a hospital, is that right?
Yeah, no, that's correct. So I am one of the self-employed community midwives that works alongside the HSC home birth services. So basically our service differs from not in the hospital in the sense that we do all of our care in the community, in the woman's home. The woman has her home birth. Obviously, she gives birth in the safety and comfort of her own home. And we provide care then for 2 weeks post-birth. So that's what I'm doing currently. And then I also teach hypnobirthing to expectant parents.
Okay, I definitely need some of that. We're going to talk about, hopefully, the experience going through the hospital system and if you're in the community system. But to start with, I suppose the goal of this episode is to help people prepare mentally for giving birth. And for a lot of people listening, I imagine it will be their first time. But can I start by asking you, do first-time mums typically tend to give birth like right on time or later? Because I've heard later.
It's really hard to pinpoint that, to be honest. When you hit 37 weeks, we say that, you know, this is the safe period for you can give birth at any point. And any time kind of between 37 and even up to 42 weeks is a normal time frame to give birth. When we talk about your due date, you know, it's one day, and about 5% of women give birth on their actual due date. So it's really a guesstimate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're giving you 5 weeks. And actually some women even go over the 42 weeks, which can be normal. So it's really, really hard to pinpoint that. It can be more common to go over your due date. But as I said, it's not always the case.
Okay. And I suppose just to reassure people that, you know, some people go before 37 weeks, maybe, you know, ideally they wouldn't go until then. But are there any like majorly common reasons why a baby would come sooner than it's ready?
Preterm birth would be anything earlier than 37 weeks. Again, there's so many reasons and medical situations as to why that could happen in a pregnancy. And again, it's something that we need more research on, similar to a lot of things in pregnancy. There's a lot of research that could be done. With preterm birth, there's some correlation to the placenta and to do with that, the actual weight of the placenta, which could be related to poor diet, which may be related to preterm birth. Again, preterm birth, there's some research out there that suggests that it's actually 4 to 5 times more likely if there's an imbalance in the pH of the vaginal flora. And there's a really nice study actually that links the length of the cervix along with an imbalance in pH to increase risk of preterm birth. So saying that, I would always tell my clients, especially those who are at risk of bacterial vaginosis, UTIs, thrush, if they get the things like this that are common to them outside of pregnancy, I would always say to take a really good probiotic to actually boost the really good bacterial flora within the vagina to reduce the risks of preterm labour in that sense.
Okay. And then is there a certain number of weeks? I know obviously before 37 is considered preterm, but is it like from 34 weeks where the likelihood of your baby surviving is extremely high?
You know, in recent years, there's been so much progress in neonatal and different medications, different machinery that they use. Like there's babies that have been born at 24, 26 weeks and they have thrived and they've survived, and which is fantastic, you know. So in that sense, the outcomes are so much better nowadays because of the advances in technology.
When I am ready to go, when I'm ready to pop myself, what exactly is happening in the womb?
So there's a couple of different things that are happening as well as in your uterus, but actually your whole entire body.
Yeah.
So the very first thing that we talk about is actually your hormones. So when we talk about your hormones, there's a change that happens. So the very first hormone we talk about is melatonin. And sometimes you hear about people and they take melatonin tablets to help them sleep.
Yeah, I do. Sometimes.
This is one thing. Melatonin is released during darkness. So when the sun goes down, we release melatonin in our skin. And this is what helps to get us ready for bed. It gets us ready for sleep. When that starts to produce, then your oxytocin then starts. And your oxytocin, or some people say it as the love hormone. Mm-hmm. So this is produced when you make love or have sex, whatever way you want to put it. When you hug, you laugh. It's the hormone you need for your contractions in labor. So when you have your melatonin, your oxytocin, and that's why you hear of a lot of women going into labor at nighttime. And actually most babies are born between the hours of 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. for those particular reasons. So when your hormones are working, you then have your endorphins. So your natural endorphins is your natural painkiller. And this is what we have to allow you or to help you cope with the, I suppose, in inverted commas, the pain. But those triggers, it goes back initially to the melatonin. So that's the very first trigger with the hormones. The next point, the other changes that happen is the uterine muscles. So the muscles of your uterus, there's loads of different ones, but the ones that we mainly focus on, there's ones that are circular, round ones that go the whole way around, and then you've got long ones that pull up. So initially, when your round muscles relax, then your long muscles are free to pull up. And this is then when your labor starts and your active labor begins. The other thing then is your baby. So there's some studies out there that suggest that when the baby's lungs are completely matured, that helps to trigger labor.
Okay.
So there's some research out there that suggests, well, it could be your baby that actually kicks off your labor.
Okay. And a lot of those things, maybe you as the mother might not be aware of. You might not be aware of the melatonin kind of kicking into gear. But what would be the signs to look out for you as the woman who needs to either call the midwife to come over to the house or get yourself to hospital?
So there's a couple of different ones, and every woman is different. So that's why we educate the women in all the different kinds of signs. So the very first one would be what we call a show, or like a mucus plug. And this relates back to your round muscles. When they relax, this is when your show usually releases. Slightly bloodstained or a little bit brownish streaked in it. And that basically just means that labor is on the horizon. It might not start straight away. It might take a couple of days. It could take a week, but it's a sign that your body is getting ready to start. The next one then is your waters could break at any point. I know one of my previous clients, poor thing, rang me when she was out shopping downtown and her waters broke.
Oh, God.
But that's okay.
Is that a case of, you know, what we see in the movies, this massive outpouring, or is it just like a trickling, or does it vary from woman to woman?
Again, it varies from woman to woman. Sometimes a lot of women feel like a pop and then a gush of like watery fluid. Other women just have this constant little trickle. Sometimes you hear of women saying, God, I feel like I'm constantly wetting myself. But sometimes it can actually just be their waters. So I will always say, if you're unsure of if it's normal, if it's not, always check with the hospital. You're always better off going in, even if it's just for the reassurance. The third one then are your contractions. So your contractions, they can start at any time. They could start before your waters break. They could start after your waters break. And the big thing with this would be you need to time them. So we need to know the frequency, how often they're coming, the pattern, and then also the strength. So how long they're lasting. And depending on what pattern and how strong your contractions are will vary according to what stage of labor you're in.
And can you talk me through the different stages of labor then, or active labor, early labor? I've heard of these different things, but I'm not really sure. I just imagine that you're screaming for like 40 hours.
Oh no, not at all. No, there's no screaming. I know it's so typical. That's what you kind of think of, and that's what the media portrays, isn't it? Like in movies,
exactly.
And programs.
That's why you get scared.
Absolutely. And it's a woman on her back and she's just screaming the house down, and it terrifies women. And that's not it. It's not how it has to be or how it is anyway. But with labor, so it's broken up into different stages. So the very first stage we call early labor, or sometimes it's referred to as the latent phase. This can go on for hours. For some women, it can happen for days, and for the very few, sometimes a couple of weeks. But it's normal. That's the big thing. It's normal. Everybody is different. So what happens in the early stage is that your cervix, it needs to shorten and thin out, and then it dilates as well as baby's head comes down the birth canal. So your cervix, if you actually touch the tip of your nose, your cervix starts off by feeling like that. And then if you kind of purse your lips a bit and then feel your lips, how soft that feels. That's the difference. That's what we want. We want it to go from firm like your nose to soft like your lips during this phase. And we want it to thin out as well. So first it starts off quite thick. So if you actually feel your forefinger, like the base of your forefinger where it meets your knuckle, you feel how thick that is. And then we want it to become thin, like the little webbed part in between your forefinger and your thumb.
Okay.
So there's a lot of work that your cervix has to do before it even starts to dilate. And this can be the longest part of your labor. So when we talk about your contractions, the frequency, the strength, they completely vary. They could come, you could have one every 30 minutes. You could go through a phase of an hour and they could be coming every 5 minutes and then they stop. They could last 20 seconds, 45 seconds. They're very sporadic and all over the place. It stops and it starts. And it's, as I said before, it's completely normal. And I always say to my women, there is eventually a light switch that happens, and that light switch will go. And then your contractions, they're coming maybe every 2 minutes. They're lasting every 60 seconds. You can nearly predict when the next one is going to come. And at this point, then your baby's coming further down through the pelvis, down the birth canal. Your cervix is completely thin, like that little bit in between your finger and your thumb. And your cervix is dilating now. So it could be about 3-4 centimeters. That is active labor.
Okay. So active labour would be maybe a little bit quicker than early labour.
Exactly. So once you're in active labour and you're having regular, frequent, strong contractions, your labour will, it should progress. So at this stage, this is when you would be going into hospital. This is where you'd be admitted into the labour ward. Or if you're at home, you'd be ringing your midwife to come out to see you.
If you're at home and you know that you're in early labour, are you waiting until... Like, should you be looking out for signs of dilation before you go in, or would you go in and be sent home, or how do you know when to act?
So this, I suppose, with the dilation, the number of centimetres, and it's not always focused on centimetres. I know women particularly are quite, they really want to know, like, how many centimetres am I? It's very common for women to go in. They can go into the assessment unit. They may be made checked by the midwife there. The baby will be checked. And if it's a case where you're still in early labour, that's absolutely fine. And depending on where you live, how far you are from the hospital, they might say, like, everything is fine. You can go home and wait a little longer at home for active labour to then start to progress. Every woman is more comfortable at home. You've got your own bed, your shower, your own food. You're more relaxed. So definitely, I think the longer or the more you can cope at home is so much better. And then you go in to the hospital as soon as you feel like you need, either if you wanted more pain relief or you felt like it was progressing more, the contractions were becoming a lot stronger. So yeah, I think, and I always say you have to listen to your body as well.
Yeah, okay. And even before you get to that point where you're in either early labour or active labour, contractions are potentially going to be something you've experienced. So can you explain to me what Braxton Hicks contractions are, and is it normal to start having practice contractions in the lead up? Like, when for me would be considered normal to start having the odd contraction?
Usually on your first pregnancy, you would feel them a little bit later on in your pregnancy. So usually around, it could be 36, 37 weeks. With women who maybe it's their second or just their subsequent baby, they might feel it a little bit earlier in pregnancy. Braxton Hicks, some people refer to them as false labor pains or practice labor pains. I would never call them false because they're doing something. Mm-hmm. They have to be doing something, and especially if you're feeling them. And the whole point of this, I always say, body is getting ready. Yeah. It might not be in the throes of labor, but something is happening, i.e. when you are feeling those tightenings, those kind of cramping in the lower parts of your abdomen, they're your round muscles relaxing. So it is, they're doing something. It's a case that you're obviously just in the latent phase, the early stage of labor, with when you're feeling those kind of cramps. And like I said before, with Braxton Hicks, sometimes they can be sporadic, they could be lasting different lengths. One might last 20 seconds, one might last 60 seconds. There's no pattern to it. So that's how we know that it's not active labor.
Okay, and my consultant also said to me that with Braxton Hicks, sometimes it's linked to dehydration, or if you change position in the bed, it should relieve it. And if that's not happening, then maybe it is more a case of getting closer to actual labor. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. I like, especially the lead up to your labor, I would say to all my clients, you want to be taking in at least 2 to 3 liters of water to stay hydrated. When it's active labor, no matter what position you're in, they're going to be there. You're going to feel contractions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you're walking around and you feel them, you think, oh gosh, I feel something there. They're tightening, they're cramping. And then maybe you go for a lie down and they completely disappear. Then it wouldn't be active labor. One thing I always say is if you feel things happening or starting at nighttime, because we know, like, according to the hormones, we know that labor can start at nighttime. If it's a case it gets, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at nighttime, go to bed, have a rest. And if it's a case you wake at 2 or 3 in the morning and no matter what you do, your contractions continue, then it's more likely labor.
Is it possible to describe what a contraction feels like? And is it what I think what I've heard before is like a quite a bad period pain, or is that very much not the case?
Well, I personally don't have kids, so I haven't actually experienced one. So I can only empathize with women. It starts off like a cramping and a tightness, and you feel your whole abdomen just become quite tight and hard and firm. And then as it dies down, then it gradually releases and it goes soft again. Some women feel a lot of lower back pain and discomfort. You may feel some pressure on your pelvis, on your hips. So it, and it varies again. It can vary from woman to woman as to what it feels like. God, some women are so lucky in the sense that they're like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm in labor. And then they come in and you're like, yeah, you're in the throes of labor. How are you not,
Wow.
in more discomfort? You look so comfortable in a way. But it does feel like, because your muscles are tightening and they're pulling up and actually pushing baby down. So yeah, I would say like a really bad period cramp.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk first about the hospital experience, and then I'm going to ask you about home birth. So just to give people an idea, even my husband was saying, like, what do we do? Like, do I just like leave the car outside and go in with you, or do I let you off and go find parking? What happens when you arrive at the hospital, assuming you are actually ready to go?
Yeah, so it's that's a tricky one at the moment, especially in the current climate. At the moment, their partners are not allowed into the hospital unless you are actually admitted to the labor ward in labor. So, usually what happens at the moment is, unfortunately, I know it's not ideal, but you may be going in on your own. If it's a case that you're in a lot of discomfort, a lot of pain, you can call for someone at the front desk and they'll be able to come out with a wheelchair for you. And typically what happens is you would go up to the assessment unit first and you'll be seen by a midwife, and she would actually be able to determine if you are in active labor. If you are, then you'd be admitted to the labor ward and then your partner will be able to come up. However, depending again, if it's the early stage of labor, the midwife might suggest you could go home, but again, that depends on how far away from the hospital you live. Or equally, it might be a case, okay, well, maybe just go for a little walk, use the birthing ball, and we'll reassess after 4 hours. And in that sense, in that space of time, active labor would have kicked in. Outside of this whole COVID-19 and things like that, your partner would be going in with you even to the assessment unit.
And things like an induction, is that a case of happen that happens be, and you know that it's going to happen, you're going in for induction because you're gone over your time and you just need it needs to happen?
Induction of labor happens for a wide range of reasons. An induction of any kind of intervention in pregnancy or labor, there has to be a firm medical reason to be interfering or intervening within a pregnancy or a labor or a birth. A lot of hospital policies vary from hospital to hospital. The majority of evidence out there would suggest once you've got a healthy mum and a healthy baby, to actually go to 14 days over your due date is safe and it's evidence-based. And like I said, there would have to be a proper medical reason to intervene or interfere in a pregnancy or birth. I mean, it's good that we have an induction pathway there for the women and the babies that need it. And with an induction, you would be given a date to actually go in, so you would know when your induction starts. Saying that though, it doesn't mean that you'll actually give birth on that day. Sometimes the induction process can take a couple of days until you actually give birth.
And then I guess some women are electing for C-sections, and in a lot of cases, women who have C-sections, it happens in the moment that they've had to go for an emergency section. So are there any major reasons why an emergency section would have to happen?
So there again, for a C-section, there has to be a medical reason for it, both whether it's an elective or an emergency. When we talk about emergency sections, there again, there's a wide range of reasons. It could be a case where things just are not progressing in labor, and it may be what we call an obstructed labor. So something is happening inside the uterus and with baby that you're not dilating. It could be related to baby's position. If there's any problems with baby's heart rate, that we're not happy with, the doctors or the midwives aren't happy with, it could be a sign that they're not getting enough oxygen during labor. So that would be another one to go for a C-section. Again, there's a lot of different reasons, and sometimes it could be a combination of things why you would have a C-section. But definitely in labor, it would what we call it, an emergency C-section.
Okay, talk to me about pain relief options when you're in hospital. So we've all heard of the epidural. What else is there, and how does the epidural work? And is there a case of some people not being suitable for epidural, or is there a certain amount of time or a certain number of centimeters dilated before you're given one, just so we know what to expect?
I think when we're talking about pain relief options, I think it's really good to actually bring it right back to the very beginning before introducing any kind of medications. You need to look at what kind of coping strategies that you're using. You know, there's so many things like gentle birth, hypnobirthing, there's massage techniques, you have the likes of TENS machines, water or hydrotherapy, you've got aromatherapy, all these different things. It's all about keeping you relaxed. And it, again, it's bringing it back to the very, very beginning when we're talking about the physiology and your hormones. You want your body to stay relaxed so that everything can actually progress as it's supposed to, and that your natural endorphins have a chance to kick in and keep up with the contractions as they're progressing. When we're talking then about, I suppose, the actual medicinal side of pain relief options, you've got pethidine is the first one. So you've got, which is an opiate. It's an injection that can make you quite sleepy. Sometimes it makes you a bit nauseous. It can be really good for the early stages of labor, or if you were going through an induction. You also have the gas and air or laughing gas that some people probably know about. More of it off. You inhale this. Sometimes people say that it makes you feel a bit drunk and dizzy, but you'd actually breathe it in during contractions. And the effects of this is quite short lasting in comparison to the pethidine. The pethidine injection can actually remain in your system as well as baby's system for quite some time afterwards. When we're talking then about an epidural, there's, I suppose, this idea that an epidural takes all of the pain away, and it's not always 100% that way, unfortunately. An epidural is basically an injection done by your anaesthetist, and it's done into your lower back. And what happens is you're basically numb from the waist down. So you might be able to feel touch, but you shouldn't feel pain. With an epidural, there's no time limit per se. With an epidural, you would be in the bed, so you wouldn't be able to walk around. In that sense, there's a risk of it slowing down labor if you get it too early. With an epidural, there's also an increased risk of instrumental births, so babies born by the forceps or the suction cup. But saying that, it's great if you wanted a really good sleep, if you had just been in labor for hours upon hours and you needed a rest. Mm-hmm. When we talk about, you know, is it too late to get an epidural? It takes time to actually site it, and then it takes time for the medication to work. So sometimes it can take about 20 minutes for the anaesthetist to actually get the right space in your spine, and then it could take another 20 minutes for it to actually work. So I mean, I don't know how many times I've been with a woman in labor, and we're just, you know, the anaesthetist is just about to start, and you're kind of looking at her, and she's kind of sitting up, or, you know, you can, I suppose, as a midwife, you get to know women's sounds and looks. And I'm kind of thinking, do you need to push? Yeah. She's like, I feel a lot of pressure. I'm thinking, okay, you know, we don't have time for an epidural here. You're going to have a baby. So in that sense, it's too late.
Talk me through a home birth. So one of my very best friends is a week apart from me, and she is going the home birth route. And I suppose in my ignorance, I would hear that and think, well, is that not so much more riskier than a hospital birth? But I know that I'm wrong in that thought.
A home birth is a safe option for all low risk women. So our service, it's the HSC home birth service. It's a free service to all women who are deemed eligible. There's a really great research that was done over in the UK. It's called the Birthplace Study. And they basically looked at about 64,000 women giving birth in different places. So home births, hospital, and also different birthing centres. So they found with first time mothers, there was a slight increased risk to baby's health at a home birth. But the differential, it was so small that it didn't support the fact that the hospital would be safer. And then they found with second or subsequent births, they found no difference in the risks with mums or babies in that sense. The transfer rates will be higher now with first-time mums. Our rates are about 50%. But those transfer rates, when you look at them, it's the reasons for them would be the likes of request for an epidural, or there has been no progress in labour, as opposed to those kind of scary emergencies that you would hear more of. So, and it's, you know, it's, I think it's sad the fact that home birth, particularly in Ireland, not a lot of women know about it. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's understood what it is and what the service is.
And what are the benefits of a home birth, in your opinion?
So with our service, you have continuity of care. So every woman has their own primary midwife, and you see the same midwife throughout your pregnancy. She's there for your birth, and then you also get 2 weeks of postnatal care with that midwife in your home. We do all the visits in the home setting. You have whoever you want at your birth, your partner, if you want your mom, your friend, whoever you want, mm-hmm. is there for you as well. You know, our appointments aren't rushed, so we take as much time as we need. I don't think I've ever done an appointment that's lasted less than an hour with my women. It's an individualized care plan. So, you know, we look at what the individual woman wants. Does she want a water birth, or who she wants with her as a support there? I'm saying that then for women, if they wanted a water birth, they can have that as well. I think it's particularly the continuity of care for me is the biggest thing in a service like this, because I know every woman's blood pressure. I know every woman's baby's heartbeat and what's normal. So any kind of deviation from that normal, I know, okay, we need to refer in. Sometimes when you see different midwives or different doctors at your appointments, they might not pick up on something as much as I would, because I know what is your normal.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you mentioned their transfer rates, do you mean where you will have to transfer someone into a hospital if something goes awry?
Yeah, so at every home birth, we have you have two midwives, and we have all the equipment that we would need in any sort of emergency. So we would have fluids, we have cannulas, needles, we have medication, and we also have an ambulance on standby for every home birth. So there's a lot of different reasons for transfer. As I said, the more common reasons, when you look at our transfer rates, they're more common for if a woman is requesting an epidural,
okay,
if there is no progress in labor, or if the woman's waters break and there's what we call meconium. So meconium is a sign that baby's done a poo inside. So we transfer for those reasons. They're the more common reasons that we would transfer.
Okay. I want to ask you about an episiotomy. Is that a very common? And what, can you just explain what that is, I suppose, for anyone who is, I'm sure anyone who's pregnant has heard of it and is terrified.
Yeah, it's kind of one thing that a lot of women have said to me before about episiotomy. Again, same with induction, same with cesarean section. There has to be a medical reason for an episiotomy to happen. So an episiotomy is a cut down below, close to your perineum. So the more common reasons it would be recommended to have an episiotomy is during an instrumental birth. So if baby's being born by the forceps or the suction cup, or if maybe baby's head is crowning and suddenly their heart rate goes down and we need actually to expedite the birth. There are more common reasons for episiotomy to happen. I was actually just looking up the stats on this, the most recent ones. It's averaging nationally about 16.3%, but
wow,
it varies from hospital to hospital. Different studies would say different things, and an ideal rate would be between 5 to 10%. So actually our rates nationally are quite high for an episiotomy. And I suppose just for anyone as well, there's a great website. It's called bump2babes.ie. Sorry, bump2, the number 2, babe.ie. And you can actually click into each individual hospital and you can look at their statistics for everything from episiotomy, cesarean section, instrumental births. So you can actually have a look at that specific hospital where you're booked into and see what their numbers are.
Okay, this is a question that I'm really taking one for the team on, but is it a given? Am I going to poo myself pushing?
Do you know what? I was booking a new client there today and we had the exact same conversation. This is going to sound really weird, but I love seeing it. Every time I say that, it sounds so bizarre. Yes. To be honest, yes, you will. Basically, when that happens, your baby's head is coming down the birth canal and it's pressing against your back passage. So if there is anything in there, it's going to come out. But, you know, for a midwife, it's a sign that, like, you're nearly there. Your baby's literally about to be born. But, do you know what? In the throes of it, you're not going to be thinking of it because you're going to feel your baby's head coming down and you're going to be so focused on birthing your baby, you're not going to think about it.
Okay.
I promise.
What happens the minute the baby comes out?
So the minute baby's born then, baby is given straight to you and we do what's called skin to skin. So baby is directly up on your chest and a blanket is put over baby and sometimes a hat. By doing skin to skin, it helps to regulate their temperature because they've been inside you for 9 months, so they've been at the perfect temperature and then all of a sudden they're out into the open and a room with no clothes on. So we need to regulate their temperature and the best way to do that is skin to skin. The other thing that we do is what's called delayed cord clamping. So we leave baby's umbilical cord attached. And by doing this, they actually get between 80 to 100 mils of extra blood through the placenta, through the umbilical cord. And this actually helps to increase their oxygen. It increases their iron supply and it helps to stabilize their blood pressure. So usually we would leave that and let them have all their lovely blood.
And how long do you do skin to skin for?
So it's recommended to do uninterrupted skin to skin for the very first hour after birth.
After you've done your hour of skin to skin, like is it natural then for feeding to happen? If you're breastfeeding?
Yeah, so as soon as baby's born, their sucking reflex is at its strongest straight after the birth. So some babies latch on straight away as soon as they're born and they suckle at the breast. Some take a little bit longer, but usually, yeah, straight away.
And then when would the baby get taken off for any like checks to make sure everything's okay and obviously get a little bit cleaned up maybe?
So like I said before, ideally there should be uninterrupted skin to skin for the very first hour. And then after that, that's when they would do all the head to toe checks, check 10 fingers, 10 toes, check baby's weight and do all those kind of measurements and that. So, it should be an hour after the birth because you want a chance to, like, you know, it's the first time you're meeting your baby, you want to bond with them and things like that. I suppose in between that time then as well, you'd be waiting for your placenta to come and then also the midwife would be checking to see if you would need any stitches.
Okay, and I'll ask you about the placenta now in a second, but is there the same sense of urgency for skin to skin than with the partners, say with my husband? Like how soon would he want to have that embrace to get those hormones going?
He can do it whenever he wants, whenever you want to hand baby over. Sometimes if we'll say if a woman is getting any kind of stitches for argument's sake after the birth, maybe she's, you know, wants to focus a little bit more, or you know, at that point you can hand over baby to your partner. They can do skin to skin straight away. It's any time really. And then even with any women who've had a cesarean section, sometimes after a cesarean section as well, when the doctors are kind of finishing everything up, the midwife can bring baby and dad out to another room. And even at that point, dad can do skin to skin while they're waiting for mum to come back out of theatre, which is great. I mean, I think it's so important for dads to get that bond and that skin to skin equally as much as the mums.
Absolutely. And so when the baby comes out, you're not done. You then have to birth the placenta. Please tell me that's nowhere near as challenging as giving birth to the baby.
There's no bones in the placenta, first of all. So it's all soft. So with your placenta, God, there's different ways you can birth it. So some there's what we call active stage or active management or physiological management. I won't go into the ins and outs of it, but usually what you would feel is the start of some cramping and more tightenings again, not the same extent as your labor ones, but they do start up again. And that's just a sign that, okay, the placenta is separated and it's ready to birth. And normally you, it's a couple of pushes then. And depending on if you're in the bed, the midwife might give a little pull down just to help guide it out. If you're in an upright position, if you're squatting or on all fours, you can give a push and the placenta can come out that way. So it's definitely a lot easier than baby. but yeah, you still feel quite a lot of pressure as it's being born. But then the relief afterwards is every woman is just like, oh God, thank God that's done.
Okay. And if you were in hospital and everything went fine, and you had a vaginal delivery, how soon would you expect to be discharged?
So again, this varies from hospital to hospital, and it depends on the service that they provide. And then it also depends on where you're living. So for argument's sake, I know some different hospitals, if you're under Domino Midwives, or if you're in a certain catchment area, if everything is normal, you could be home within 12 to 24 hours of having baby with a normal birth. With cesarean section, it might be a case where you could be in anywhere between 24 to 72 hours. That's depending on how you're recovering after the cesarean and after having baby. So yeah, I mean, some women, yeah, they could be home after 12 hours.
Okay, amazing. Because you just want to get back to your comfort, I suppose. But then for me, in my head, I'm also like, I want to make sure that I'm surrounded by experts for as long as possible in case I'm like freaking out and being like, I don't even know how to hold the baby.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah. You will. And you know what? You have this maternal instinct, and it's really bizarre how it kicks in without you realizing it. I think, you know, and you know, you should give yourself a bit more credit. Like, you'll be fine. And every woman with their first baby is in exactly the same position as you, and they've all done it, and you'll do it as well. You'll be great.
Oh, thank you. I want to ask you about birth plans. So there seems to be an awful lot of content around birth plans these days, and I don't have one. And I think I'm the kind of person who I would be maybe an anxious person. And some people who are anxious would maybe plan to the nth degree to feel better, feel more in control. Whereas I, in something like this, would feel like if I plan, the chances of it going to plan are probably slim. So, and especially when Mother Nature is involved, my only plan really is just to try and you know, obviously to look after myself and to get through the experience with me and baby safe. Should I have a birth plan, or is it okay? Do you think there's a lot of pressure for people to have, you know, I want this kind of music playing, I want this, like, are you setting yourself up for being potentially a little bit more stressed out if it can't all work out the way you had envisioned?
I think, first of all, it's definitely good to be open-minded, and particularly with your first. You know, this is the first time your body is doing it. It's the first time you're going to experience what labor and birth feels like. So I do think it's good to be open-minded. When I talk about birth plans anytime on my hypnobirthing courses, we always refer to it as a birth proposal, because a birth plan, it comes across as very set in stone, and it has to be like this. And labor and birth, it's not like that, unfortunately. We don't know how things are going to pan out. I think it'd be good to have a bit of an idea, in the sense that, like, you know, if you want what we were just talking about, delayed cord clamping, you know, if you want that and make sure baby gets all the blood, things like that. You want skin to skin with baby, and if you can't, you want your husband to have it. If you want to breastfeed, little things like that. It's absolutely fine to be able to, or to put down, I would like music playing, or if I can use the shower, if you wanted to use the birth pool, if that was available. So it's little things that you would like to, but then also be aware that it's not always 100% going to be like that. So that's why we say we're proposing these kind of things, but yet aware that things can change, and it's to be open-minded, as I said before, about labour and birth.
Absolutely. You've mentioned your hypnobirthing course, and that's something that I definitely plan to make some time for as I kind of enter the final the final stages before I give birth. How important is that? And I mean, really, what is the goal of hypnobirthing? And I guess, can it work in tandem with other more traditional interventions? Or do you think that it means that you maybe don't even need other interventions?
So hypnobirthing is... It's taking your mind into consideration. And I think particularly with labor and birth, we neglect it quite a lot and we don't realize that the effect that our mind can have on a birthing body. Hypnobirthing, I don't think people, again, similar with the home birth, I don't think people understand what it is. It's not this crazy hippie, you know, giving birth in a field type thing. It's really, really simple. It's about using your mind. It's positive affirmations, positive birth stories. It's learning, it's actually teaching your body how to stay relaxed and how to stay calm. It's learning particular breathing techniques that you use in different stages of labor. But on top of that, it's actually a learning course to learn what's happening in your body. And then if something does go in an unexpected turn, how to manage that, how to cope with it, the questions to ask. And then a big part of it is, you know, you practice a lot with your partner. So there's different relaxation techniques that you practice together so that, you know, your partner is actually helping you in all this. Because so many times, you know, partners come in, like, I feel like a spare part. I don't know what to do because I can't have the baby. I'm just kind of sitting there watching her. Whereas hypnobirthing is actually, it's a partnership, and you need that support during your labor. And also, it's also to be actually have someone there to say, like, you can do this, you can do this. We always hear the negative stories in childbirth. We don't hear enough of the nice positive ones, and they completely outweigh the negative. And it's just about immersing yourself into that positive mindset with hypnobirthing. And the more you practice, the better it will work. And particularly with specific breathing techniques, it sounds bizarre because we breathe every day, but it's to link breathing techniques with certain visualizations to actually help you and to listen to your body, to actually listen to your instinct as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important to tune in and connect with your body when it's doing, like, probably the biggest physical task it will ever take on. And to have that awareness will only stand to you, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. And I encourage a lot, like, well, I encourage all my home birthing mums to do it, because, you know, we don't have the benefit of epidurals at home. Obviously, we can transfer if they want one. But women opting for home birth, you know, an epidural isn't in their mindset. It's not in their birth proposal, shall we say. So they're looking at different techniques, such as like the hypnobirthing, to actually help them in that sense. And, you know, with hypnobirthing, there's no screaming. Like, if a woman wanted to scream, I don't mind. But you find that a woman has so much more control because she's so much more tuned into her body with the hypnobirthing. And, you know, recently, back in May, I remember one of my women, you know, she was in the pool and she was breathing, and she turned around to me and she said, "Do I need to switch into what's called down breathing? What you do is when your baby's actually about to be born." And I just said, "You know, what do you want to do? If that's what you feel like you should be doing, then you do it, you listen to it." And she said to me afterwards, that's all she needed to do. And then she focused on her breathing. And I don't think she made any sound, to be honest. And then all of a sudden this baby appeared in the water and it was just absolutely gorgeous. But, you know, there, this whole image again in the media and the movies of a woman screaming her head off, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. And that's not what birth should be.
Well, that's very reassuring. I want to ask you about things that we need to be maybe a little bit mindful of in the first few days post-birth. So there's certain things. I remember my friend telling me that she was in the shower, or maybe she was still in hospital, but like a blood clot or something fell out, but she got a fright and thought it was like an organ or something. So like how normal is that, and what should be aware of, and what should we not panic about?
Yeah, oh, that can be normal. With blood loss in particular, you know, I always say to women, okay, if they tell me, you know, I passed quite a large big blood clot like that in the shower, you have to go back. Okay, what were you doing before you had a shower? Was it a case where you've been in the bed for the past 4 to 6 hours and you haven't moved? Did you have a full bladder? Have you been breastfeeding constantly? These kind of things will impact your blood loss. So definitely, while you do need to rest definitely rest. But even if it's just getting up out of the bed and going and getting a drink and going back to the bed, that really just light movement, because gravity is going to help get rid of all that blood loss. And blood loss after birth, it can be totally normal for anywhere between 2 weeks, 4 weeks, and for some women it can last up to 6 weeks. And yeah, it reduces as the days go on. So it starts to go like a heavy period, and then it goes like a light period. But sometimes, particularly breastfeeding moms, if they've had a really heavy night or a really heavy day of breastfeeding, their blood loss can increase a little bit, because your uterus is contracting when you breastfeed, and that's why you bleed a little bit heavier. But if that happens, you keep an eye to it. Usually it would start to reduce again, and then after a couple of hours, it's absolutely fine. If you're passing blood clots that are the size of your palm, or if it's literally trickling down your leg, straight back into hospital if you're at home, or if you're in the hospital, you call a midwife straight away.
Okay, and definitely stock up on those enormous canoe-like maternity pads.
Oh yeah, the gorgeous ones, definitely. Don't be getting those tiny little panty liners, no way. You want the big ones, the real, like the proper nappy kind of ones.
Oh god, they're so glamorous. And come here, would you have blood loss vaginally with a C-section? No.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, okay. It's totally normal. With a C-section, you'd find that that blood loss actually stops sooner in comparison to a vaginal birth. But you would still bleed vaginally with a C-section.
And then I suppose before we wrap up, a lot of this might feel to women like it's kind of out of your hands. You got to let nature take over. You just got to be patient and wait and trust and go with it. But is there anything we can do in advance to help? Such as, I think, perineal massage I'd heard about. What general pre-labor tips or things do you think make it a little bit easier?
Well, from kind of around 36 weeks is when I would go through with my clients things to help prepare them. So you're talking about, first of all, your diet. So as I said before, you really want to be drinking 2 to 3 liters of water, because you want to stay hydrated. On top of that, you want to look at your diet. So increasing certain oils in your diet, the likes of olive oil, rapeseed oil, nuts, avocados, really healthy fats to actually help moisturize your insides and your skin. Other things would be raspberry leaf tea would be a real popular one for women to start drinking. And you can actually start raspberry leaf tea from 32 weeks. You can take one cup a day. That helps to actually relax and contract the muscles around your uterus. Dates as well. So actually 6 dates a day from 36 weeks. Some research suggests that it actually helps to ripen your cervix, and it reduces the likelihood of needing an induction of labour. And also it shortens the length of your labour.
Like the fruit.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't stand them. absolute hypocrite here telling women to eat dates and I don't eat them myself. But yeah, 6 dates a day. Okay. From 36 weeks. I always get my women to do certain exercises. So I always encourage women to look at spinning babies and also what's called the Miles circuit. So they're really, really simple, really light exercises. And the idea is that they help to release ligaments around your uterus and your pelvis. So it helps to get baby into a really nice position for labor. Light walks. If you've got one of those yoga balls or birth balls, by sitting on them at night time as opposed to slouching on the couch can help as well, because you want to create as much space for baby in there as well. And then of course you've got the perineal massage. So with perineal massage, you can start from 36 weeks again. So even just a little kind of lubricant, even like a coconut oil or something, and just your thumb and your forefinger, just probably best to do it on the toilet because you've got easier access, or if you wanted your partner to do it, that's absolutely fine as well. And it's just literally a really light massage. So it's actually helping to bring the blood flow to that area. And it's helping with the elasticity in that, in the muscles. And then, of course, your breathing, your positive affirmations. Even if someone hasn't been doing hypnobirthing, I would still encourage to work on breathing techniques and with positive affirmations, and just surround yourself with positive birth stories. There's so many out there. And that's what you need to be listening to in the run up to your labor and your birth.
You're so right. I mean, like, I don't know if they feel like they're better off knowing the worst case scenario. Maybe they feel like they can cope better, but I feel like we only hear about the bad stories. And I really want, with this episode in particular, I mean, women are doing it, there's one born every minute is what they say, so like it's we're built to do it, we're made to do it, but yet we still are scared. So you've seen so many women give birth in different ways, like what can you say to really reassure women who are just getting a little bit scared now as they approach their own ready to pop moment?
You know what, it's completely about mindset. And like I said, we don't give enough credit to actually what's going up on in our mind. And I sat down with so many women, and there could be the ever so slightest little emotional or psychological block that's stopping things from happening. And it is about your mindset and your perception on something. And I think the best thing I can say is, you know, I had one woman there last year, and she was absolutely 100% home birth, this is going to happen. And the outcome of it in the end was she had a hospital birth and ended up an emergency cesarean section. And now herself and baby were absolutely fine, and I looked after them for the 2 weeks afterwards. And I sat down with her after and I said, you know, how do you feel that went? And she said, do you know what, I was dreading the hospital, but I would do it again. And the fact that she initially was 100% home birth and ended up with a complete, the furthest opposite you can get from a home birth in a cesarean section. But she said that she had a good experience, and the fact that she would go back and she'd do it again in the hospital. That's the biggest thing. So it doesn't even necessarily mean that you have to have a vaginal birth to have a good experience. That's not it at all. A lot of women have cesarean sections and they have positive experiences, whether it's at home or in a hospital. It's about your mindset. And I think when we tap into that and we give the attention that needs, it changes everything.
Thank you so much. And if people are interested in working with you or interested in learning more about home births, where should we direct them?
You can go on to communitymidwives.ie. So first of all, that will give you a list of all the community midwives working with the home birth service around the country. I'm on Facebook and under Anya Hennessy Midwife. And I'm also on Instagram as @midwife_Anya. And then there's also the website, which is ahmidwifery.com. So you can get me on any of them if you wanted to learn any more about home birth or wanted any information on the service, and then equally about any hypnobirthing.
Amazing. Anya, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. And I just feel like I'm going to be listening to this over and over again as the next few weeks come upon me. So thank you for sharing all of your expertise and your wisdom. And hopefully those women who are about to go into labour have a lovely experience with you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.